Chapter 3. School Days. As the carriage travelled along the road, I wondered why Peggotty hadn't come to say goodbye. Suddenly the carriage stopped, and Peggotty appeared from behind some bushes. She hugged and kissed me, and put a bag of cakes and a small purse into my hands. Then she disappeared. In the purse were 3 coins from her and 2 more from my mother. I offered the coachman, Mr. Barkis, one of the cakes, which he quickly ate.
"Did she make these cakes?" he asked.
"Peggotty?" "Yes, of course," I answered.
"Does she have an admirer?" Mr. Barkis asked.
"No, not Peggotty."
"If you write to her, tell her that Barkis is willing."
I didn't know what he meant, but I gave Peggotty his message in my first letter to her. Mr. Barkis drove me to Yarmouth, where I ate lunch before boarding the coach for London. I travelled through the night and arrived in London early in the morning. Someone from the school was supposed to meet me, but nobody was there. I sat in the office at the coach station and thought about what I would do if no one came to collect me. At last, a tall, thin young man dressed in black clothes entered the office and walked towards me.
"Are you the new boy?" he asked.
"Yes, sir," I replied. He informed me that his name was Mr. Mell, and that he was one of the teachers at the school. The school, Salem House, was a large, ugly building with a high wall around it. It was empty, because the other boys had not yet returned from their holidays. Mr. Mell told me that the headmaster, Mr. Creakle, was also on holiday with his family. We walked into a classroom, where I saw a sign that said, "Be careful of him, he bites." I looked around for a dog.
"What are you looking for?" asked Mr. Mell.
"The dog. The dog that bites," I told him, pointing to the sign.
"That sign is for you, because you bit your stepfather. You must wear it on your back. I'm sorry you have to begin your time here like this."
Mr. Mell put the sign on my back, and even though no one was there to see it, I felt as if hundreds of eyes were watching me. I walked around the school, looking at the names carved or written on desks, doors and walls. One name was always written strongly and clearly, J. Steerforth. Another name, Tommy Traddles, also appeared often. I wondered who these people were, and if they would be my friend. In the meantime, I started my studies with Mr. Mell. One day, Mr. Creakle returned and said that he wanted to meet me. His assistant took me to his house, which was next to the school. I entered the room and saw a fat man with a bald head, small eyes, a small nose, and a large chin.
"So, what has he done so far?" asked Mr. Creakle, looking at me.
"Nothing," his assistant answered. Mr. Creakle seemed disappointed to hear this.
"I have the pleasure of knowing your stepfather," Mr. Creakle informed me. "He knows me, too. But you don't know me, do you?" he asked, holding me by the ear.
"Not yet, sir," I answered, thinking only of the terrible pain in my ear.
"Not yet, but you soon will," he said. "Understand one thing. If I say I will do something, I do it. If I tell you to do something, you will do it. Now you know me, boy. Take him away."
The following day, Mr. Sharp, the senior teacher, returned to school. The first boy to return was Tommy Traddles, whose name I had seen earlier. He, like every other boy who arrived after him, laughed at the sign on my back. Soon, J. Steerforth came back to school. I had already heard a lot about him. He was about 6 years older than me, very good-looking and a very good student. He asked me why there was a sign on my back and remarked that it was a pity.
"How much money have you got, Copperfield?"
he asked. I told him, and he said he would look after it for me. He persuaded me to spend most of it on food and drink for a party. I didn't mind. I made new friends and heard many stories about school life. The lessons began, and I started to learn about the strict discipline in the school. Everyone was afraid of Mr. Creakle and the beatings they got for the smallest offence. These beatings happened every day at Salem House. I was beaten on several occasions. Steerforth always helped me afterwards, and he became a close friend. In fact, Steerforth was my hero. There was nothing I wouldn't do for him. One evening, he discovered that I had read many books, and since he had difficulty falling asleep at night, he asked me to tell him some stories. Of course, I agreed, even though I was very tired and wanted to go to sleep. One day, I was pleasantly surprised when I received an unexpected visit from Mr. Peggotty and Ham. I introduced them to Steerforth, and that evening we had a feast in our room with the shellfish they had brought. Before they left, they invited Steerforth to visit them at Yarmouth. At last the holidays arrived. Mr. Barkis came to take me home, and I was pleased to see him. "I gave your message to Peggotty," I told him.
"I'm sure you did, but I didn't get an answer."
"Was she supposed to answer?" I asked.
"When a man says he's willing, that means he's waiting for an answer," Mr. Barkis said. "Tell her that Barkis is waiting for an answer. By the way, what's her name?"
"Peggotty. Clara Peggotty." Mr. Barkis carefully wrote the name on a part of his carriage, as if to remember it. When we arrived at the house, I couldn't see anyone. I entered quietly, hoping not to find Mr. Murdstone or his sister. I heard my mother's voice singing a song she used to sing to me when I was a baby. When I walked into the sitting room, I saw my mother sitting by the fire. There was a baby in her arms.
"Davy, my dear boy," she called, running across the room to greet me. "Look, Davy, you've got a brother."
How happy I was at that moment. Then Peggotty came into the room, delighted to see me. The Murdstones were not at home and wouldn't return until late, so the three of us had dinner together. Oh, it was as if we had returned to the good old days. During the meal, I told Peggotty what Mr. Barkis had said. She began to laugh.
"Peggotty," said Mother, "what's the matter?"
This made Peggotty laugh even more.
"What is it, Peggotty?"
"Oh, Mr. Barkis wants to marry me, Mom."
My mother spoke slowly.
"That would be good for you, wouldn't it?" she asked.
"I won't marry him, Mom. Neither him nor anyone else,"
Peggotty insisted. My mother became serious and looked at Peggotty. "Please, don't leave me, Peggotty. I couldn't manage without you," she confessed.
"Leave you? Never! Your husband and his sister would like me to do that, but I shall never leave you, Mom."
We talked for so long that we forgot how late it was. When we heard the Murdstones arrive, my mother gave me a kiss and told me to go to bed. The next morning, I went downstairs with fear in my heart, not knowing how the Murdstones would treat me. Mr. Murdstone looked up at me as I entered.
"I'm sorry for what I did, and I hope you will forgive me," I told him.
"I'm glad you're sorry," he replied.
Life was miserable for me when the Murdstones were at home. Miss Murdstone counted the days until I returned to school, marking each day on a calendar as my departure came nearer. I could do nothing right. I wasn't even allowed to hold my baby brother. If Mr. Murdstone was in a good mood, I changed it to bad. If Miss Murdstone was in a bad mood, I made it worse. They didn't want me to be near them, but they didn't want me to spend time with Peggotty either. Finally, it was time to return to Salem House. Mother came to the gate to say goodbye. I kissed her and my baby brother. As the carriage drove away, I heard my mother call my name. I looked back and saw her holding up the baby for me to see. It is an image I shall never forget.